Welcome to the Plant Grow Reap podcast. Welcome
back to the Plant Grow Reap podcast. My name's Chelsea. I'm the Marketing and Communications Manager at Aintree Group. I'm here today with Andrea, our CEO, and Simone, our Wealth Operations Manager. And we just wanted to have a bit of an informal discussion around being women in the workplace, our experiences as female management team members, both from the perspective of myself and Simone, who are sort of in the early stages of our career and have grown into our managerial roles at Aintree Group, and then Andrea, who has some more experience across a few different industries over a few more years than us. And before we get started,
correct way of saying there's an old person at the table.
Old is a relative term. We'll go with experienced.
Yes, okay.
Experienced is a good way to go for that one. Before we get started, though, I just wanted to throw out there that for any male listeners, please don't tune out now that you've heard what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Please be part of the conversation. It's really important for you to be aware of these things and our perspective. We can't change anything without everyone being involved. And in order to be involved and be informed, you need to sort of hear different perspectives. And also, we just want to obviously acknowledge that there are plenty of non-female identifying people in the workplace who have probably experienced both similar issues to us in terms of imposter syndrome or not being taken seriously or whatever the case may be, as well as, you know, people from different backgrounds experiencing their own different challenges and discriminations, but obviously we can't speak to those. We'll just be coming at it from our own experience and our own perspective today. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll throw to Simone first up, just because I know, like me, you've come into a manager role at Aintree Group and you've worked in a couple of the different business units and you're probably the most recent manager out of the three of us. So I'd love to know, your experience coming into that role.
It's really interesting, not only moving into a managerial position, but also moving into a managerial position in a different business unit.
Yep.
And specifically for me, it was moving into a managerial position in a business unit that was newly created.
Yep.
So there wasn't so much of the being able to be like, oh, you know, this person was here before me. I'll sit down with them and be like, how did you do this? What's the best way to go about it? How did you find this worked? It was coming into it and having the full support of Shane and Andrea to make it my own and do the role how I wanted to. But it also was really difficult to figure out what I actually needed to do. So with Wealth, there's commissions and there's different portals that need set up and that sort of thing. And so it was a transition, but it was also a difficult transition to have that increased responsibility and also not having sort of not so much a mentor, but just somebody to be like, hey, how did you do this?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
I resonate with that a lot because both of my roles at Aintree Group have been ones that I've originated as well. So again, not having that person to be like, this is what we did and this is how to go about it and this is the best way to do that. And you've got to have the confidence to just go in and make it your own. And that doesn't necessarily come naturally, even with the support that you get from people. And that might even be, you know, it speaks a little bit to what I've heard anecdotally about, you know, when women are applying for job roles internally, externally, whatever the case may be, and they see a list of either qualifications or required experience, or this is the job role, this is what you need to be able to do. Apparently, anecdotally, there is a statistic floating around that if women look at a job application and there is one thing on that list that they haven't done before or doesn't apply to them, they will not apply for the job.
Yep.
Whereas a male applicant will look at a similar list and half the stuff, they could be like, oh, I've never done that before, but she'll be right. Like, you know, it's just a level of confidence that it just must be, again, we're generalizing here, but more naturally there for that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think with the way you two are, the conversation that we're having at the moment, because as you said, both of you came into roles that didn't previously exist in the organization. So, and you, Simone, came into a completely new business unit.
Yes.
So that didn't exist in the business at all. So it was all very new to everyone. So it's not as though there was even, you know, we didn't even know, Shane and I didn't even know how those things were working. And so it was like a really steep learning curve and really easy for people to be able to sit back later on and go, I couldn't have done that, Simone, if I was you, because I wouldn't have known how to manage that, or I wouldn't have been confident enough to be able to say, I don't actually know how I'm doing this. Like, what am I supposed to do here? And being honest with the people around you and saying, I don't know what I need to do here. What do I need to do? And sort of working things out together. And I think that it's really important to be, because women don't have that sort of self-confidence to be able to say, it'll be right, I'll sort it out. They also often don't have the self-confidence to say, I don't know what I'm doing, whereas I think men in the workplace are more likely to put their hand up and say, I've got no idea what I'm doing here. And everyone's just like, oh, yeah, yeah, don't worry, we'll all work it out together.
Yep.
But a woman will not say that, because she's just really self-conscious about the fact that there's already a whole bunch of barriers in her way.
Yes.
And then that's just one more. Like, who's going to say, oh, I don't actually know what I'm doing?
And it's one more that she's adding herself.
Yeah,
Why would you add another barrier when you already know there's so many that you've already bypassed?
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly.
It just sort of feeds into the imposter syndrome a little bit of, should I really be doing this? Like, if I don't know what I'm doing. Whereas, you know, us all as adults, as a collective, as I get further on in life, I realize that we're all just working it out as we go. And yeah, having that realization of, oh, I need a real adult. I am the real adult. So, and it's not to say that we don't work it out, because we always work it out.
Yeah.
There has been some, like, insane, weird, wacky solutions that I have managed to come up with just because I needed to make something work. It's just, the panic and the approach and everything seems to be a little bit different. Yeah. The mindset around it is a little bit different.
And I read a quote this morning on LinkedIn which really resonated with me, and partly because I'm a mom and you guys aren't there yet, but you will be one day, I'm assuming. The quote was the start of a recruiter's post, and it said, remember that your mum is also living life for the first time.
Yeah.
And that resonated with me because my kids will always come to me first, which I love. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But everybody is doing something for the first time sometime in their life. So whether it be that it's your first time as a manager, or your first time in a new job, or your first time of anything, everyone has had a first time. And you will always go back to the most experienced person in the room to say, what would you do? But sometimes it's better to sit between people and colleagues and say, what would you do? And it doesn't matter if it's everybody's first time. So I think with the two of you, because there are lots of first times, because you're so young and it's, you know, you're just stepping into your careers, as you said, it's important to just keep that in your mind that everybody has been there for the first time sometime, and it's okay to be able to say, this is my first time doing this. So don't judge me. You know, it's my first time as a manager. I'm going to make mistakes, and that's okay.
Yeah. And we're all our own worst critics as well.
Yeah, yes. Totally.
And you did touch on a little bit the idea of being the default parent, which is sort of how it's worded now in the vernacular. How was that being, you know, someone with a career and also kids, and also I'm aware that you started a business with very young kids as well, while also balancing being the default parent? That must be challenging.
And we have talked about this a lot in our previous podcast episodes and everything, and there's lots of parents in our office, and there's lots of step parents and, you know, people who have stepped into parental situations. So it's not just people who are actual birth givers and stuff, it's a lot. The mental load is heavy on any parent, but on the default parent, whether it be a mom or a dad. And, you know, in this situation, I'm talking about it from my perspective. I'm really lucky that Shane is a very hands-on dad. Not all parents are hands-on, whether they're male or female, but there is no way that we could have done what we did. There's no way I could have done what I did without the support of our parents, our, you know, mums, dads, whatever, being stepping in and doing the things that they needed to do. And I think that is a pretty common thing for women in the workplace, is that the ones who are able to achieve big things are the ones who have really good support networks around them, or who are really strong women to begin with and just basically get on and do it. And, you know, I've met a few women in the last few months where they have, you know, taken the leap into business or taken the leap into management, and the mental load is a lot.
Yeah.
And that is just going to happen. So you guys, you know that. And we've got, you know, mums in our businesses who have gone off, had their babies and then come back, and you've got to work in a way that works for people, because, you know, mums and dads, I say, we've already given the disclaimer, I apologize for the dads in the room who do that, but they are really good people to have in the workplace, because they're really adaptable and they're really, you know, committed, because they want to be where they are. And so it's, you know, you've got to be flexible enough to be able to manage those things, because the last thing, and, you know, talking about from the two of you's perspective, I don't want to lose you guys in our business because you choose to go and have babies. I want to make it work for all of us, because, you know, you are great at what you do. So why would I say, oh, okay, go have babies, go do something else. Yep. And I've got to find somebody else to do all the amazing things that you do. So it's, businesses have to be flexible around that sort of stuff these days. Otherwise, you know, we can't do it. And childcare and all of those things are really expensive things to have to focus on. And again, the default parent is normally the one who has to work the childcare and do this and do that. So whoever the default person is in the relationship, it's hard.
Yeah.
It comes back to it takes a village, which you touched on.
Yeah.
In what you're saying is you want to be involved in that village to assist, which is.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got kids within your, you know, family nephews, unit where you will step up and do the things that you need to Simone, when you need to for your siblings. And it is a village. Like you cannot make it in business or you know as a manager if you don't have a village around you. I just don't think it is possible if you want to parent as well as work. Yeah.
And there's so many ways that you can make it work. So one of my what I do with work is I have a work from home day. And on that day, I actually spend the first couple of hours of my day, I go to my mum's house and I spend 2 hours with her and my nephew.
Yeah.
And I get some FaceTime with him, which is really great, because otherwise I wouldn't see him during the week. And I help. That means that my sister can go to work and do her things. And then I go back home and I do my work day, and then I go see my other sister with her with her little girl. And so it's a nice balance, and it's nice to feel involved in that community a little bit more than just on the weekends, which is great.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think on the village as well, the workplace is part of that village. So having that flexibility and that support that Andrea was talking about, and like Simone's example of working from home, that's really important, because that supports that village. It means that you can retain really, really quality workers beyond, you know, that drop-off point that can often happen because a workplace doesn't support the flexibility that's required. The village is not just the parents and the grandparents and the people in your personal life. It's also important that you're supported in the workplace as well, and you feel that you're still valued and able to contribute, because you can. You absolutely can. It just, like you said, it requires a different approach.
Because
your life has changed.
And you know, the working from home is one option, working different hours to suit the different ways of people's work, because some, you know, people have a spouse who works at certain times of the day. And so fitting in with that as well to make sure that, you know, like talking about Chelsea in this instance where, you know, her partner works at the other end of the day, so yep. not during 9 to 5 necessarily. And so it's like, okay, so when does Chelsea get to see her partner? Well, you know, sometimes it means that Chelsea makes a decision to work at different times of the day. And I think that, you know, from our perspective and from most businesses' perspective, particularly if you're in office, you know, 9 to 5 is a fake thing.
Yeah.
It's like somebody's made up 9 to 5.
I think it was Henry Ford, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
it was.
Like you have to work you have to work so many hours a day and you have to work so many hours a week, and that's just fake. Like, it's fake deadlines. What does it matter if someone works 7 till 3 or, you know, 10 till 6, or who cares?
Yeah. If the work gets done, it does not make
and,
a difference.
You know, clients will adapt to that as well. Like, I have no doubt that if we said to our clients, our phone lines have a person answering them between 10 and 4, they would be okay with that. Like, they're not going to turn around and say, oh, wow, you guys aren't responsive at 9 o'clock in the morning, you know.
Who is? Who's not making a coffee at 9 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah,
I mean,
really? Yeah, that's
yeah, why, what are they emailing us about at 9 a.m.?
Yeah. So I think those things are just no-brainers. Like, why are we making those social constructs a thing to keep people out of workplaces?
Yeah.
Why would you do that to, you know, there's some instances where people need to be face-to-face because, like, we do, you know, team meetings on a Tuesday, so it's really important for our team culture that everyone's there on a Tuesday. But, you know, does it matter if people come in just before the team meeting, or do they have to come in at 9? You know, they don't have to do those sorts of things. So, you know, made up stuff that I guess, you know, if we're going back to the men, women thing, I think if women were the ones who made those rules, there'd be a lot more flexibility around it than men saying, oh, it's 9 to 5 and it's crazy, you know, ads back in the 60s where all the men were carrying their
little briefcases
into the office and, you know, popping it on their desk and opening it and stuff. And that's just not normal these days.
No.
So
no, you know, some people say, oh, well, there's not enough or women aren't being given enough opportunities in the workplace, or they can't do the work that's been assigned to them. They can. You just need to make sure that it's flexible to work around all of the other expectations that they have in their lives. Like, you spoke about the mental load before. The women in the workplace, 9 times out of 10, are the ones managing the mental load, not just of their role at the workplace, but the mental load at home as well. And are likely the default parent and all these other things. And so just having that understanding and perspective is really important. And I think that's where having women in managerial positions and, you know, female CEOs and things like that is really important, because you can bring that perspective from lived experience, and you don't feel that you have to say, oh, well, this is the way it's always been.
Yeah.
But earlier in your career, did you find that the constructs were that was the way it was and there was no shifting from it? Because obviously we've come into our career at a time where things are a lot more flexible, which I'm very grateful for. And I'm also very grateful to work somewhere where that flexibility is celebrated and encouraged, because I know that even in this day and age, not everyone is.
Yeah.
I imagine it wasn't always the case early in your career.
I started my first job outside of, like, the part-time stuff that you do while you're at uni and things, but my first job was in a factory.
Yep.
And so the factory was very male oriented, and it was you start at 8 o'clock because that's when the factory door opened, you finished at 4 because that's when the factory door closed. And you sat at a desk and you basically didn't move from that desk except to, you know, go to the bathroom and have your lunch break. And it was all very regimented. And, you know, that it was a great experience. And that's the way life was. It wasn't that long ago, but it was long enough
disclaimer,
ago.
It was not.
There weren't dinosaurs roaming the earth at the time. And then my second job was in a pretty male-dominated industry, where it was still pretty regimented. We didn't have any part-time people at the office that I worked at. I don't think there was any part-time people really at my first office either, but no part-time people. If people took maternity leave, it was kind of a, you know, you got replaced for your maternity leave, and then that person was a maternity leave replacement, which we've never done at Aintree Group. If someone goes on maternity leave, then we will probably employ somebody else to do the role and then keep them. Like, I would never say, oh, you're just here while that person's on maternity leave. Because again, you know, maternity leave is another one of those social constructs. Like, who's to say that somebody wants to even take maternity leave? It's okay if somebody says, you know what, I'm going to have a baby and then I'll take a few weeks off. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't, like, why? Who am I to say, well, actually, that's, you know, you should probably stay home with baby, it'll need you. Like, yes, of course, baby needs its mum, but, you know, there's a whole range of ways that baby can still have mum and that sort of thing. So I just think, you know, for me, and the reason why we set up Aintree Group was because, and this is probably a funny little situation, it was because Shane wasn't getting enough flexibility in the workplace that he worked in, because he wanted to be part of the kids' lives when they were tiny babies. And the expectation was that, you know, to be where you were at that level, you needed to come in the office at, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning and leave no sooner, you know, earlier than six, and, you know, that sort of stuff. And that was the expectation. And he wasn't working hard enough, according to the people that he worked for.
That's
which is
crazy.
Like, that's so insane. It's not a thing, like, it's not even a woman thing. I think it's women, as we've said to start with, women make it a thing for themselves because they put so much pressure on themselves. But it is also a thing for men in that respect, that working flexible hours, I think,
it benefits everyone.
Yeah.
Like, the that's the thing. Why are we preventing flexibility? It's not just women that benefit. It's
absolutely
literally everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't care who works whatever hours. Like, it doesn't matter to me as long as we've got what we need to meet client capacity. And you know what? That's my problem. Like, making sure we've got enough people in the business to meet client capacity is not the person who's taking maternity leave or wanting to work from, you know, 10 till 3 or whatever. That's not their problem. They've got a set number of hours that they can manage for their lifestyle. It's my job to make sure that I've got enough people in my business to cover the people that want to do that. And if I choose to put a job ad in that says I'm looking for somebody who works 20 hours a week, that's my call. I can't expect the person who works 20 hours a week to work 38 hours a week, because that's not how it works.
That's so not the job they applied for.
That's exactly it. So, you know, it's about a realistic expectation that it is my responsibility as the person who does the capacity budget to make sure we've got enough capacity to cover our client load. And if someone comes to me and says, you know, I'd like to change my hours and they need to be this, then I have to make an assessment about whether we can do that or whether we can't. And, you know, normally I would say, yes, we can do that, because I'll just put on another person who will work those other hours, or we will, you know, there's capacity in other places. And that's a really important thing to me, to make sure that we have more people than we need. And this is probably, Shane's probably going to say, don't say that in the podcast. So feel free, Chelsea, to cut it if Shane says don't say that. I'd rather have people, and he hates this terminology, sitting around twiddling their thumbs.
Which no one ever
no
is.
One ever
There's
does.
Always more
There's no
work
time.
To do.
I would rather people do that and feel that things are a bit chill than everyone running around going, oh my God, we can't get everything done. Or some, like, you guys coming to me and saying, I'm so burnt out, I have to take 3 days off because I haven't put enough people around us to make sure that things work. And so that's a really important thing. And I think possibly in other workplaces that doesn't happen so much, because everybody's like running on a really tight, like, we've just got to make things make ends meet. And, you know, Shane and I have always made a commitment that we will pay what we need to pay to make sure that there are enough people to do the things that need to be done. And we will wear that. That means that, you know, sometimes other things have to give.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, even if you do have just enough staff to get through all of the work, and then somebody does get burnt out and it's like, oh, you know, I need to take a couple of days. It can be that that person's taking the 3 days, but then for those 3 days that they're off, they're still stressed because they're thinking about the 3 days worth of work that they've now missed to look after their mental health, and then they're going to come back and not only have all of the existing work before those 3 days, but have that extra 3 days worth built up again. And so it's just a never-ending cycle, the snowball just gets bigger and bigger that you're trying to push up that hill.
And that's one of the reasons why we spent so much time, energy, effort and expense on putting procedures in place at Aintree Group, because it's really important to be able to say to people, if you take time off, someone else can be doing those checklists and making sure that the things are happening, because there are situations in our business where only certain people can do certain things because they have the expertise to do them. And if nobody else knows how to do it, then it does just pile up and pile up and pile up. And the recognition where some people were the only people who could do things, we had sat back and said, that's not okay. Like, we can't be in that situation going forward. And it's tough to deal with the change management around that, because I will have to go into a director's meeting and say, we need to employ another person because this person has got too much going on and it's too much. And they'll say, you know, that how much is that going to cost us and stuff? And I'm just using it as a hypothetical. It doesn't happen ever. Fortunately, we've got people in our business who actually understand that that's just the way it has to be. But that happens in other workplaces. You know, if you want to put on a new team member, it's got to go through, you know, a committee of 15 people before you can actually do it. Whereas, you know, I said to Chelsea the other day, you know, if we don't have enough capacity to be able to do these other things that I've just thrown at you, then you tell me, because we'll put someone else on to do that, because we have to have a recognition that there is a huge mental load already on people. But then putting procedures in place means that Chelsea can then go away on annual leave and know that she's not going to come back to 400 things that would have actually just been Chelsea's job before. She can now say, okay, all of these things can still happen. There'll still be 400 things on Chelsea's list when she gets back, believe me, because I keep sending her emails. But we don't have that same situation where people will go away on leave or, you know, need to take some time off because they're unwell, and they come back and there's hundreds of emails in their inbox. And we, you know, that those things happen, and then you adapt to make sure they don't happen again or don't continually happen. And, you know, procedures and stuff like that, as much as some people hate writing them, some people hate following them, some people don't like the idea of, like, what does it mean to have someone else who can be able to do my job. It's actually, I think, and this is probably a woman thing as well, like, oh, if they write a procedure about this, does that mean that I'm no longer important? Yeah. Like, I can be replaced? Like, absolutely not. You know, I'm writing the procedure so that you can go away on annual leave and, you know, so think of it as a insurance policy against the, like, burnout and that giant pile of work coming at you.
And having the procedures as well, it helps, it creates a structure that helps support what you were talking about before, about having the confidence to be honest and say, my plate is overfull, without being concerned that, that means I can't do my job. That means I'm not right for the role. Actually, it just means that your role has grown.
Mm.
For example, like, my role grew so much that we ended up having to bring someone else in. And I was scared to say anything, not because you or Shane had indicated that that meant that I was fired. It just that inherent fear that I don't have the confidence to say that I'm struggling because I think that means that I'm bad at my job, when in fact what it actually meant was the job had continued to grow and evolved to a point where it was well and truly beyond the capacity of one person at all. And having the policies and procedures and having sort of that top-down understanding that okay, now is the time we need to bring in an additional team member, and then we have the procedures there which help bring the new team member on board, get them up and running quicker, and all of that goes into support that you can be honest, you can have the confidence to say those things and say, actually, I put my hand up, I need help, I need an extra team member, I need someone else to take this particular task off my plate, and having those procedures supports that as well. I'm interested as well to hear, Andrew was talking about sort of working in male-dominated industries, and I know that Simone's role as the wealth operations manager, so you work with only male... only men.
At the moment, at the moment.
And I know that part of your role is chasing things up, following things up, and like that...
Herding how cats.
How is that... dynamic, because that is, you know, not necessarily something that we are encouraged to do.
Yes. Mm. I've become very fond of the saying, not my circus, not my monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
But it is my circus and it is my monkeys.
Yep.
So it's very much said in jest. It's been very interesting interesting, difficult, and a learning process in changing my mindset from being an employee who is given tasks to complete said tasks to being the person who is setting those tasks and expecting them to be completed by X date.
Yep.
And then also following up those tasks when they're not completed by X date. So it's been hard because I don't even know if I can explain it properly. Changing your mindset from being an employee to being a manager is very difficult. It's very difficult to make that change without coming across as bossy or authoritarian and micromanaging, I suppose. But at the end of the day, if that's how it's coming across to them, it's probably only because you're chasing them up for 4 weeks.
Yeah, sounds like a them problem, Simone, not a you problem.
Yeah, and so it's changing your mindset to being like, well, no, I'm literally just doing my job to the best of my ability to the expectations that others are expecting me to do my job. And if they have a problem with that, then we can have that discussion about it. Mm. But at the end of the day, there's not really an issue because, as I said, you're doing your job.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and would you ever think of a male manager in that way? Of like, oh, that was really bossy.
No.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and I do have some notes written down here. Men are seen as leaders, whereas a woman in the same right is often seen as bossy.
Yeah.
And it's often those unconscious gender stereotypes that are still current in a lot of ways in a lot of different businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely about changing your mindset and just being aware of language that is used.
Yeah. And you said it's unconscious, and it is. Like, we're not accusing anyone of doing it. I'm sure there are people in the world that have those more conscious biases, but we're speaking more to completely unconscious bias. And this is where it's important to have non-female people as part of the conversation, because you might not even realize, like, and that's the thing, you want to do the right thing, and unless you sort of hear more about the experiences of the women who you work with, your sisters, your daughters, your mums, and their experiences in the workplace, nothing will change, because we can't change things all on our own.
Yeah. I had an interesting conversation with another female CEO the other day, who actually is the person that is my counselor. She's my guidance person.
Yep.
And I have been meeting with her for, you know, probably about 12 months now. And, you know, she helps me talk through, you know, business stuff that I need support on, personal things that, you know, I might have had issues with and whatever. And she said to me the other day, I was communicating something to her. She said, you know, how's it been at work over the last couple of months? And I said, oh, you know, we're just flat out with this and this and this. And she said, oh, so, you know, how have you managed to, you know, delegate tasks and stuff like that? And I said, oh, I'm a bit of a control freak. And she said, okay, we're going to stop right there with the control freak thing. She said, it's really bad language to use for yourself. Like, do not call yourself a control freak. And I reckon there's probably a good amount of the female population out there who call themselves a control freak, because like you said, Chelsea, there's, you know, the mental load of being the default parent. There's the mental load of the things that you have to do,
like, in a household.
Like, all of those things. And you say, I'm a control freak, which means I don't let anybody else do stuff. And she said, you got to stop using that language with yourself, she said, and stop using it in general, but don't say it to yourself, because the language around the connotation around that is that it's a bad thing. Like what you're saying is I'm a control freak, which is bad. Like it's bad. And she said, I don't think you're a control freak. I think what you are trying to express to yourself is that there's a level of expectation from clients and from others that needs to be met, and your decision to do something a certain way relates to that outcome. And she said, that's not a bad thing. That's actually a really good thing. So we shouldn't be using that sort of language. And I think, you know, conversations in the workplace need to focus on the sorts of language that we use to explain things, like a woman is not bossy. Mm. She might be assertive. She might be forthright. You know, there's a whole range of things, but nobody's ever going to say, oh, that bloke is so bossy. No. Like, you know, they're going to say, oh, she's really bossy. Mm-hmm. So we need to be conscious of those things when we talk about how things happen and ourselves, because, you know, we do push those words out to the ether. And they come back at us.
If it's okay for us to say that about ourselves. Everyone else, oh, she's already referred to herself as bossy.
Yeah.
That gives us the right to do that as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's for the whole businesses as a whole, they need to start thinking about the language. And it's not just about making sure that you're respectful of other people's, you know, pronouns or whatever, but you've got to be respectful of people's individualities as well. Because, and this is funny because we recently it was Neurodiversity Week.
Yeah.
And that is something that is only just starting to be talked about in workplaces, about how neurodiversities affect people at work and how workplaces don't adapt to make things more inclusive generally. And I think those conversations could not happen if it wasn't for the conversations that have already started to happen around gender and, you know, that sort of stuff. Like, so like you said, Chelsea, we've got to keep all of the lines of communication open with all communities. We're talking about women specifically today, but what we talk about in these sorts of things will help conversations around neurodiversities as well, because people who are neurodiverse need different sorts of workplaces. They need to be able to work from home, or they need to not work from home. So, you know, just by the same token, some people hate working from home because they can't focus in their home space, but some people hate working from an office because it's too noisy.
Yeah.
You know, fluorescent lights, all of these sorts of things, the conversations don't start until somebody starts a conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, opening up the channels of communication and having somebody come to you as, you know, the manager of whatever it is that you're doing, it's really important to keep those conversations open and not dismiss somebody and go, oh, yeah, just another thing I have to think about, you know, because we can't have all of those conversations unless someone starts them somewhere.
Yeah. And it comes back to, again, flexibility helps everyone.
Mm.
And, yeah, that's, like you said, it snowballs and the conversation then rolls into helping someone else and adapting to suit someone else. And yeah, that's really important. That's how good things happen.
yeah, exactly. Now, we talked about this before we pressed play on the podcast. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. The kitchen.
Yes.
It's not actually an elephant.
Yes,
it's a lion. Lion in the room. The kitchen.
Yes.
So, dear Antro Group team members, please listen to what we're saying in this respect. If you are in the kitchen, it's not a female team member's responsibility to clean up the kitchen after you, nor is it their responsibility to fill the kettle after you or fill the water cooler or any of those things.
Coffee grinder.
Like, you know, there will be an element, and we had this little chat beforehand that there are some people who, and this is any gender, there are females who also don't look after other people, not necessarily in our office, I'm not saying this now, but just care about the people who you work with and understand that we are a team from top to bottom. So when we're not doing things in a silo, everybody uses that kitchen, everybody uses all of the things in the workplace. So, you know, it's all about making sure that everybody feels like they're cared for. And if that means that you fill up the kettle after you've used it, or you fill up the water cooler because it's empty and you notice it, people see that. Mm-hmm. Like, you might not think people see it, but people see it. Like, people see you being a good person, and regardless of your gender, your colleagues and your workmates see it. So, you know, it's a, this isn't a male or female thing, but kitchens are typically the female thing, aren't they? Yeah. And, you know, we, the three of us would walk into the kitchen and there's no way we would walk out of it without wiping the bench down if we saw the bench was messy.
And it's that unconscious thing again. Yeah, it's not to say that any of the male team members intentionally want to leave it a mess. It's that
it's not even a passing thought.
Why we're sharing it, because it's probably not even something you've thought about. And that's kind of our point, is that is what we think about. We walk into a kitchen and we see that it's messy and we're like, well, I don't want to leave it like this, so I'm going to clean it up.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, that expectation has been set for us growing up in the household, in other workplaces, wherever it may be, where it hasn't necessarily been set the same example for our male co-workers. Yeah. And therefore, it's not that you don't want to or you don't care. It's that you haven't yet shifted that mindset to notice, which is why we're bringing it up to say, see what you don't notice.
Yeah, exactly. Like, open your eyes and see the things that happen in the workplace, regardless of whether it's keeping things tidy or whatever. Like, everybody has a role to play in the conversations, in all of that. And, you know, there are some guys of the men in our workplace who are incredible, and they will put it in their calendars to do things and to make sure that all of this stuff happens. And, you know, whether it be putting on a barbecue or, you know, ordering pizza or, you know, screwing the screws into the chairs and stuff like that. But, you know, there are some people who see those things more often, but everybody notices when everybody is part of the team. So I think, you know, we keep those conversations open and make sure that the team talks about those things as well. And I think, you know, we do a pretty good job of saying when people have, you know, done a teams related values.
Yes, thing, we're very good at celebrating, you know, the wins,
making sure that everyone knows what they're doing. But the eyes open. I would never even remotely consider walking out of a kitchen because, again, I think people would look and go,
she left it like that. Yeah.
She left it dirty.
And I didn't wipe the bench.
And again, and it's that thing of, oh, how are people perceiving me?
Yeah.
I'm worried that I'm going to make the wrong impression, which, again, it's really ingrained. And that all comes back to the mental load thing again.
Yeah.
And that obviously extends beyond the workplace. It's also a home thing. Like, we've had conversations at like the work lunch table before about the mental load sort of stuff with male coworkers. And the best example I could think of, like, on the fly on the top of my head, was like, when was the last time you ran out of toilet paper at home? And it's never. When was the last time you bought toilet paper? When was the last time you noticed that there was only 6 rolls of toilet paper left and you added it to the shopping list so that the next time you went shopping, you bought that toilet paper to then restock it to make sure that no one got caught out without toilet paper? And it's sort of like, that's one very specific example, but that is sort of how a lot of females approach not only their home life, their work life. It's like the toilet paper equivalent of, you know, walking into the kitchen and being like, what, here are all the things that need to be done here before we go.
And even the toilet paper, I reckon I could say that you two would not, like, in our toilets at the office there's the little toilet paper holder. You would not walk out of the toilets leaving like one roll in the bottom of that, would you?
No.
You'd be like,
I thought you
were
going to say leaving like 2 squares on the roll.
Well,
on
that
the
as well.
Oh, that does my head in.
Yeah, but you would open it up. If you were replacing the toilet paper in that toilet, if you like had to put the thing, you would see like, oh, okay, there's only one toilet roll in there. I'm not going to walk back to my desk.
Yes.
I'm going to put toilet paper in there.
Yeah, I was almost caught out on this because there was literally two squares left on the roll that was currently being used. I'm like, well, I'll just change that now. And I opened up the canister and there were none in there.
Oh my.
I'm like, God forbid if I hadn't checked beforehand. Yeah. Like, I'd be like knocking on the wall. I'd be like, guys, can someone help? I'd be
getting a call from someone on the toilet.
Can you please? And like, there are some people who would never do that. I could never do that. And so,
The women in all of our lives are going about their daily lives doing all of that stuff. Mm. And there's no, you were talking about celebrating wins before. It's not something, you know, there's a stereotype that like,
thank you for ordering toilet paper, Chelsea. Yes. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
And it's interesting, we were talking about the language around stuff. I saw a TikTok, as you do, like a little while ago, and it was around, you know, in your household, not thanking your male partner for doing basic household things. And I realized that I did that a lot. And I, in my head, I was like, well, I'm showing my appreciation. Like, thank you for helping out. They're not helping out. They live there.
Yes.
Yeah.
That isn't something that deserves special praise. And that's not to say don't show appreciation for your partner, regardless of gender and who works more or less or anything like that.
Yeah.
But just again, that shifting that language, they're not helping. It's the same with, I know you mentioned it the other
day. Yesterday.
The dad does not babysit the kid. It's his kid. He's being a parent.
Looking after them. Yes.
It's not, it's not deserving of additional praise.
Oh, look at you taking the kids out.
Yeah,
it's
such a good day.
No, it's just, you know, and that's what I do.
And if you're going to extend that praise to the male parent, do it to the female parent as well, because she's doing that and everything else. So make sure that you're fairly sharing that praise. And I think that's something that we're not encouraged to do, is celebrate those wins. And that's something that we could definitely be doing more. Do you celebrate your wins? Like,
like
day
ordering
to
toilet paper? No.
I don't know if that's a win so much as a necessity, but in the workplace specifically.
I think I do to a select few. So Chelsea and I have lunch every day that we're in the office together along with another friend. And so I think we're really good in that friendship to share our wins, and we're very good at sort of pointing them out to each other if we don't raise them. But to the wider team, no. No, I don't. I definitely don't feel not comfortable. It's just I don't think it would be reciprocated in the way that I would like it to be reciprocated.
It'd be seen as like braggy.
So I think those things I'm also just kept to myself. But I think we're good at calling it out for others as opposed to raising them ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's a good point too, Simone, that it's much easier to say someone else is doing something good than, hey, look at me, I've done something good this week. And it's, I think, really important. And I think we do it reasonably well as a team, that people are good at saying someone else did something well. And we're better now at saying, well, you know, we start a meeting with, let's celebrate somebody's good stuff this week. And our team meetings are more related to what good stuff is going on rather than just, oh, this is a list of all the things that we've done this week. It's more about, you know, what are the team achieving and things. And again, that's just a change in mindset, a change in the conversation around celebrating each other. And I think eventually people will get to the point where they say, actually, I did have a really good week and things are really good in this respect, and I did a good job with that stuff, without thinking everyone's going to think I'm doing a little humble brag here. But, you know, go for it.
Yeah,
humble
sing
brag
your
away.
Own praises. Be your own cheerleader. Celebrate your wins. Yeah. I mean, it's also good to acknowledge other people's wins as well. Mm. And I think that's part of the conversation too. Be a cheerleader for everyone.
Yeah.
If you see something awesome, shout it out, because then I think people get more comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Both shouting out other people and then acknowledging, you know, not feeling like they're not allowed to, you know, someone, how's things going at the moment? Oh, actually really well. Like, I did this really cool thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's okay to say things are great, actually. Yeah. We've had a really good week.
Yeah. And like, I achieved all these awesome things. And that goes in general, like talking about yourself in a job interview or whatever the case may be. Like, be willing to be honest about how hard you work and the amazing things that you do, because yeah, there are people who would not think twice about it. Mm. And it's just that we've been conditioned to think twice about it.
Yeah.
And sort of tamp that down a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did want to ask very quickly before we wrap up, because we have been going for a little while here. since I've stepped into sort of a managerial role and had extra responsibilities, I find that when I go home, I've got what I do call decision fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'll get home and my partner will be like, oh, you know, I want to buy this, and what color do you like? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't care that you're going to be wearing it.
Yeah.
They're the two colors. Mm. And then it's usually black or white. So it's not like it's pink and red or yellow, or whatever. And he's like, oh, which one do you like better? I'm just like, whatever ones you like, whatever you're going to wear is the one that I like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you guys find that as well? Mm-hmm. Like having that decision fatigue and not wanting to just tell me what you want. Say what we're going to have. Don't take the decision out of it.
I don't want to talk to you about what's for dinner. Just bring just me something. Yeah. I don't care. Yep. Just bring me food.
Yeah. And I feel like that has become like a conversation more widely in sort of society. People make the joke about, oh, women are so indecisive. Like they can't decide what they want for dinner. I've been making decisions all day.
Yes.
I'm done. Yeah. I'm tapped out.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, and the reason why we have toilet paper in the house is because I have put the toilet paper in the house. Please just organize dinner.
Like, yes.
I don't care where we eat or what we eat.
Yeah. Just, and if I did care, I'd tell you.
Yeah.
The reason I'm saying I don't care is because I don't, and it's because my brain is tired.
I cannot make another decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think decision – let's do another podcast episode on decision fatigue, because it is a thing, definitely.
For
definitely.
Sure.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing your experiences.
Thank you both.
Yeah, nice to hear – well, I guess the whole point of this conversation is to show other female people that they are not alone in feeling the way they feel. However you feel is valid. Yeah. It's just about, you know, shaping things and changing things so that they are more flexible, which again benefits everyone.
Yeah.
And yeah, thank you to the non-female listeners of this particular episode.
Yeah, for hanging around.
Yeah, for being part of the conversation, because we really appreciate it. And you don't know what you don't know. And hopefully, you have a little bit of a different perspective, which is really important.
Yeah,
hopefully you go out and buy the toilet paper this month.
Yeah, buy the toilet paper, make a meal plan, make a grocery list. It will absolutely make the woman in your life stay if you have that person in your life.
100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you both. And thank you both for being wonderful cheerleaders of, those of us in the office who are female team members and female managers. It's really appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you.